If you will, please turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1. That's where we're going to be beginning this evening. Genesis chapter 1. I think it's appropriate to begin at the beginning this evening because we're talking about God's power. God's awesome power. In Genesis chapter 1, we see one of my favorite passages for the showing of God's power. Let's begin in verse 1, a passage we all know. Genesis 1 and verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void. And darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. And there was evening and there was morning the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that are from under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening and there was morning the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together He called seas. And God saw that it was good. We can go on and read this creation description, but in each and every one of these, God spoke, and something impossible happened. He said, "Let there be something that does not exist yet. Let there be light." And light was created. He said, "Let there be a separation of the waters." We can't even do that today. You know, it takes months for us to put something down into the water to build a foundation on or something like that. And then as soon as we move that, water comes right back. There's no separation. We can't do that. He speaks and it happens. He says, "Let there be earth." There is earth. That is awesome power. He is powerful. He is strong and He is mighty. If you turn over a couple chapters to Genesis chapter 6, we see the same power again, but not for building, but for destruction. Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. "And the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that He had made man on the earth, and it grieved Him to His heart. So the Lord said, 'I will blot out man, whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them.' But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord." These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous and blameless man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. And Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. "Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight. The earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, 'I have determined to make an end of all flesh. For the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you are to make it.'" He gives him the instructions. Noah fulfills. Not only does God wipe the slate clean with the entire planet, but He saves the human race inside this tiny floating box. That's awesome power. That's awesome power. To cover the whole earth with water. Do you know how deep it has to be? Like 5 miles deep of water. The water doesn't exist. Yet God said it was going to happen, so it happened. That is awesome power. And tonight, what I want to focus on with God's awesome, mighty power is that when we cry to Him, He's there. He wants to hear us, and He does hear us, and He wants to act on our behalf. If you turn over to 1 Kings chapter 19, we see another familiar story, the story of Elijah. Now, chapter 18, Elijah kind of is pretty brave. He steps up to Queen Jezebel and her prophets of Baal, and he says, "Look, this isn't right, so let's have a test, right? I'll sacrifice to my God, you sacrifice to your God, and whoever's the winner, the other people die." They say, "Okay, yeah, it's a good idea." So 450 prophets of Baal die, right? So Elijah's on the run. He's fleeing. He's done. That happens in chapter 18. So in chapter 19, Let's start in verse 9. It says, there he came into a cave and lodged in it. He's running scared. He's hiding. He thinks he's the only one. He comes to this cave and he's like, this is as good a place as any. So he holds up there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, have thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left. And they seek my life to take it away. And he said, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak. And he went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. When the Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria, and Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. And the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death. And the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that are not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So firstly, I want to look at the Lord's response to Elijah. He says, go out and stand on the mountain. And we see God's awesome power. A wind that crumbles a mountain. Fire, a whisper, an earthquake. That's power. We can't do that today. But on top of that, Elijah cries out to the Lord. He says, Lord, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm the only one left. Everybody else has either turned and served Baal or is dead. I'm the only one here, Lord. And the way a lot of people read this passage, the way I read this passage, was God says, too bad, get back to work. Right? He says, go and do this and this and this. My dad pointed out, and I think he's right. Really, God says, okay, but first. Read that last little bit. It says, the Lord says, go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint to be a prophet in your place. He says, okay, I got one more job for you. And then you're coming home. I'm pulling you out. I hear your cry. I'll answer it. If you turn over a couple chapters to 2 Kings, chapter 2, we see that's exactly what God does. It's a wonderful miracle. His power is displayed in pulling Elisha out, saying, you're done. 2 Kings 2, starting in verse 9. Elijah and Elisha are together. It said, and when they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, ask what I shall do for you before I'm taken from you. And Elisha said, please let there be a double portion of your spirit on me. And he said, you have asked a hard thing. Yet if you see me as I am being taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if you do not see me, it shall not be so. And as they still went on and talked, behold, chariots of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into the heaven. And Elisha saw it and he cried, my father, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. And he saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them into two pieces. And the Lord does exactly that. He hears Elijah's call and he says, okay, come home. He doesn't die. He doesn't suffer. Jezebel doesn't get to him. You remember the oath that she makes? She says, so let the gods do to me if by this time tomorrow I don't kill you like you've killed my prophets. She doesn't get her hands on him. The Lord hears his cry and has mercy. We see this over and over again when it comes to the Israelites. If you turn back to Exodus chapter 3, These really are God's chosen people. He hears their cries, and he uses his power on a plethora of occasions, a multitude of occasions, to save them. Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 1. This is the story of the burning bush. It says, "Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. And he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed." Again, another example of God's power. This thing's on fire, but it's not burning up. "And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to him, God called him out of the bush, 'Moses, Moses.' And he said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground.' And he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. And the Lord said, 'I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt. And I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. And I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt.'" And we know Moses argues with God, but God hears the cries of the Israelites, and he says, "I'm here to solve this problem. I'm here to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians. I've seen their suffering. I've seen their oppression. It's over. I'm done with it. I'm going to rescue them." And as you continue on through Exodus, that's exactly what happens. Turn over to Exodus chapter 14. We see another example of God's awesome power, but he's doing exactly what he promised Moses that he was going to do. It's the crossing of the Red Sea, the exodus of the people. Let's start in verse 1. I like starting in verse 1 a lot. Get the context. Exodus 14, verse 1. "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Tell the people of Israel to turn back and encamp in front of Pi-hahiroth, between Magdol and the sea, in front of Baal Zephon. You shall encamp facing it by the sea. For Pharaoh will save the people of Israel. They are wandering in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his hosts. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord.' And they did so. And when the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the mind of Pharaoh and his servants was changed toward the people. And they said, 'What is this we have done, that we have let Israel go from serving us?' So he made ready his chariot, and he took his army with him, and took 600 chosen chariots, and all the other chariots of Egypt with the officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the people of Israel while the people of Israel were going out defiantly. And the Egyptians pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them and camped at the sea by Pi-hahiroth in front of Baal Zephon." I want to pause right here, just a little recount. I'm sure you know, but the Egyptians at this time were a powerhouse of a military. They were the world power of their time. No one could beat the Egyptian army. They used archers better than anybody else. They used spearmen better than anybody else. They used horses and chariots better than anybody else. You know, when it says, he says, and he took 600 chosen chariots. He had a special forces of just chariot units. His 600 chosen chariots. And he's pursuing all of Israel with this massive army that no one has been able to defeat. You can see why Pharaoh is pursuing him. No one can defeat him. He's going to come back and take his people back because they belong to him. They're his property. The Lord had other plans, though. Verse 10. "And when Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them. And they feared greatly." Again, massive military. We'd all be afraid. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." And Moses said to the people, "Fear not. Stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You have only to be silent." And the Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff. Stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his hosts, his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh and his chariots and his horsemen." Then the angel of God, who was going before the host of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. And there was the cloud and the darkness, and it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night. It made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them on the right hand and on the left. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them in the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And in the morning watch, the Lord in the pillar of fire and of cloud looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw the Egyptian forces into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from before Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen." So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course. And when the morning appeared, and as the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen of all the hosts of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Not only does he demolish the most powerful military might on the planet, but he controls the sea and divides it. It's not muddy ground they're walking across. It's dry ground. That's awesome power. He hears the cry of the Israelites. And he says, "I will save you." That's exactly what he does. Now, if you read through this rest of the story, the Israelites don't stay impressed for long. Just a couple chapters over, turn to chapter 16. They're again whining and complaining to the Lord. Chapter 16, starting in verse 1 again, says, "They set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, 'Would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to our full. For you have brought us out here into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger.'" They've just seen God demolish the most powerful military might on the planet. He's seen him literally part water, dry mud that's never been dry. And now they're whining and complaining, "Oh, we can't get anything to eat. Oh, that we had died in Egypt." But the Lord is still faithful to them. He still hears them. Then the Lord said to Moses, verse 4, "Behold, I am about to rain bread from the heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily." So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, "At evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of God, or the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us? And Moses said, when the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat and in the morning bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, that you grumble against him. What are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord. The Israelites are still whining and complaining like five-year-olds. And God's still taking care of them. He's still providing for them. He's still making sure that they don't die before he can fulfill his promise. We're the same way today. Not necessarily, I hope, not complaining like five-year-olds. But God hears us today. If you turn to the New Testament, turn to Matthew chapter 26. We have several examples of people calling on the Lord in the New Testament. But there's an important point that needs to be made. Matthew 26 and verse 36 beginning. This is when Jesus is praying in Gethsemane. It says, then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, my soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me. And going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And he came to the disciples and he found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, so could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Again, for the second time, he went away and prayed, my Father, this cannot pass unless I drink it. Your will be done. And we know he goes away and prays the same thing a third time. We've proven by the stories in the Old Testament and the story of Christ here, God hears our cries. He hears the troubles we're going through, and he provides. He's powerful and mighty to help us through whatever. But there's a song by Brad Paisley that gets it just right, and that's sometimes the answer is no. That's how it is here. Jesus says, Lord, your will, not my will. But I don't want to go through this. And God makes him go through it anyway. Same thing if you turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Starting at verse 7. Paul makes a request of the Lord that's also denied. 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 7 says, so to keep me from becoming conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. The Lord hears. But sometimes we've got to go through something to prove a point. Let me turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. That'll be our last verse for this evening. Or afternoon, evening. 1 Corinthians 10. Starting in verse 12. Therefore, let anyone think that he stands, take heed lest he fall. No temptation is overtaking you that is not common to man. God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. Our Lord is mighty and powerful. He is awesome. And he loves us so much. And it doesn't matter what we're going through. He wants us to cry out to him. He wants to use his power for us. But sometimes, we've got to have a little faith. We've got to trust that he knows what he's doing. And sometimes the answer is no. But with that no, he'll never put us through something that we can't come out the other side. He'll never give us a trial that we cannot overcome. He'll never abandon us. I don't know about you, but that's an awesome God to me. I like thinking of God as that. Because that's who God is. His love for us is unsurpassed. So I hope this week, as you go out, think about what Garen was saying this morning. Think about this God who loves us. He is an awesome God. He is a mighty God, a powerful God. He will not abandon us this week. Let's watch ourselves so that we don't abandon him. If we can help you and encourage you in any way, Say you have abandoned Him, you want to come back. Make that right tonight, because God hasn't left you behind. God hasn't abandoned you. If you can make that right tonight as we stand and sing.
Oh, Jesus.